A linoleum knife.
What was that?
Hundy.
Okay, bye.
Someone named Barney Kessel. I don't know.
Okay.
We were talking about people named Barney.
Oh, right, yes.
While we were walking the other day. Yes. Or yesterday? Today?
Yesterday. Yesterday we were talking about Barneys.
People named Barney.
Yes.
That's
there aren't enough of them.
That's a song by someone named Barney. Okay. I don't know who Barney Kessel was, but I do know that this song came from a record of 45s that they used to put in jukeboxes at old-fashioned strip joints.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So ladies would
remove their clothing.
Ladies would gyrate to songs where other ladies would
say,
honey!
Honey!
Yeah,
why not? I'm way up here. Okay.
And so that song's great. And that was my choice of theme music this week.
Well played, Dave White. turn the thing off.
What? Oh.
Just press the power button.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Across the table from me is Dave White, film critic for movies.com.
You are Alonzo Duralde, who is the film critic of therap.com, therawrap.com.
Yes.
The rap. Like when the thing you eat.
Like when you, the light alternative to a sandwich.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, I know it's not a hip hop site. I had to explain that to some people.
To whom did you have to explain?
There was somebody where I said therap.com. They're like, well, like it's about rap music. I was like, no.
Yes, because.
Does wait, anybody
who,
even use
who that? Is this?
I'm not telling.
Who is it? Say the name.
No, no.
Is this someone I know?
Yes, I'll tell you later.
Someone close to us?
Someone I was whose name I do not want to mention.
Is
right
it
now.
Someone who should know better or someone who wouldn't know better?
Maybe somebody who wouldn't know better.
I don't listen to the rap. I didn't know you listened to the rap. I don't really particularly care for the rap music and the rap singers.
Thank you, Dr. Cosby.
So, how is it that you're writing a movie review column for a website that is about the rap music? How is that? How did that come to be?
With the rapping and the flapping and the dancing and the puddin' pops, you know. Okay.
You're a real fly movie reviewer.
thanks, Glitter. So you're drinking your tea.
With honey.
Honey!
Yeah.
Which you now have. And I'm going to crack into an iced coffee.
Your free iced coffee.
That's right. I had a coupon. And if there are any coffee companies out there who want to sponsor this show, I will happily drink your product during the program and mention the product.
Who was it that said recently that they thought Netflix was sponsoring us?
No, we just mentioned them a lot.
No, but someone was complaining.
Oh, no. This is some jerk on YouTube because I was talking about Netflix on What the Flick. And they were talking about, oh, his sponsor
Netflix. Wouldn't it be great if they were our sponsor?
Please, if Netflix was my sponsor.
Wouldn't it be great if anyone was our sponsor?
Yeah, no kidding. If Netflix was our sponsor,
Come along and monetize us, please.
We would wear like NASCAR suits.
We'd love some monetizing.
We would wear NASCAR suits with the Netflix logo all over them.
I would wear anything.
So here's my shout out to the Comedy Couch.
I don't get it. Well, you know, they start with the thing in the...
Yeah, yeah. Dennis has his...
What is it? What's opening? What is being opened on the comedy couch? I don't care about what you're drinking.
Dennis has a Diet Coke. That's what he opens every week.
Really?
To start the show, yeah.
Dennis, that stuff is real poison for you.
I know. I just, you know, I try and tell people about that. But, you know, there's only so many times you can say, hey, that diet soda is being converted
I'm drinking green tea with honey.
Being converted into benzene in your
super,
body.
Super good for me.
They don't want to hear about it.
It's got electrolytes. Wait, I'm sorry, antioxidants. Whatever. It's got something good for me.
Electrolytes. It's what plants crave. Thank you, Idiocracy. So it is July 4th weekend.
And there's a plane flying overhead.
And there's a plane flying overhead.
And our windows would be closed, but it's real hot.
Yes. So you're going to get dogs barking.
You're going to get like audio verite.
Wall of shame. Walk of shames. Today. All kinds of things going on out there. And 2011 is half over, which is
right.
Which is just weird. I don't know.
Why is that weird?
I don't know.
The passage of time still kind of blows your mind, or what?
Kind of, and just the you know, there's that whole period at the beginning of the year.
Good riddance to the first half of 2011.
It was kind of crappy,
sucked.
It did.
I mean, personally for us,
yes,
not personal, not like we still
not
like each other
personally.
We still like each other quite a bit. But Jobs did not like us in the first half of 2011.
And leading economic indicators in this household were not good.
That was garbage. And so I'm looking forward to checks happening again for the second half of 2011.
Indeed. Getting our act together.
Hence Netflix. Come, whoever's out there.
Come aboard.
Coffee, we talk about you all the time, apparently.
Yes, so... yeah. And we have a vacation coming up, which is nice. So we have to figure out. I don't want to have a show a week where we don't
not
have
a vacation that we paid for, by the way.
No.
Just
But that's another story.
That's well, it would be weird. Like, how you're so broke, how are you affording
going on vacation? No, that's true.
This is we're being treated.
It's
to a
subsidized vacation. Yeah. But I don't want us to go a week without doing a show. So I'm trying to figure out either what movies we can see before we leave, or maybe we'll do like a Linoleum Knife special and just talk about something that isn't new movies. I talked this morning on the walk. I told you my idea about maybe.
Oh yeah. So I didn't. I wasn't really paying attention. No. To what you were saying.
You never are.
Well, we had just gotten donuts.
Yes.
And I was really focused on them.
Oh, okay. I see how it is. I see where I rank.
Yeah. Donuts. Other cakes. You. Money. Money, then you.
What about pie?
Pie after cake. Wait, so there's donuts, other cakes, pie, money, you.
You're making me regret that I ever asked. Never mind. I don't want to know.
What were we talking about?
I have no idea.
Transformers?
We're going to, why not? Yes, Transformers.
I know you want to get it over with.
Dark of the Moon. No, I want you to explain your manifesto of why you think Michael Bay is a good director. So that you
I didn't
may,
say he was a good director.
You may hoist.
You put words in my mouth all the time.
Okay, no, the floor is yours. I want you to hoist yourself on your own petard on this one.
There's no petard to be hoisting me. I don't have any petards.
You like the Transformers movies.
I love the Transformers movies.
That's your petard.
Okay, in general, Michael Bay is, as a director, I understand what he is doing. And I understand.
Oh, wait, I hear someone coming up the stairs.
Could it be the nephew that didn't come home last night?
No, I think I just saw somebody walk past.
Okay. It is not the nephew that didn't come
home
last night.
He is still on the prowl and hasn't bothered to text his concerned uncle yet, incidentally. These kids today, I swear.
Michael Bay, as a director, I know what he's doing. It's not that I am unaware of what he's doing. What he is doing is kind of everything wrong.
Okay, no disagreement so far.
But at the same time, he personally, I'm only speaking for myself, he personally creates visceral punches that, while I understand are not innovative, are still effective.
Effective how?
Personally, they make me go ooh. Okay. They make me go honey. Like I'm you know,
he is touching your pleasure center.
Yeah.
That sounds wrong. But
as my friend Mike said this week, you know, liking his films, liking the Transformers movies in particular, is the equivalent of liking Limp Bizkit and the hot dogs that they sell at AM/PM convenience stores. And I agree with that.
Okay.
But do you know what's a good song? I did it all for the nookie. You know what else tastes? You know what else is good? A hot dog from wherever. It doesn't matter. And, I mean, I understand that it's a cancer food that's going to give me cancer of the teeth as I'm eating it. And I understand that Nookie is a rotten song made by a rotten, like, band. But I also know that when I hear it, when I used to hear it on the radio, I'd be like, I like that song. And I would not turn off the radio station. So here's my thing.
Okay, but
there is room in my life for garbage. idiot garbage about right. nothing.
But you know what? There's room in my life for that too, and yet I don't
but
like...
But this is not the idiot garbage
I don't like Michael Bay's idiot garbage.
It's the idiot nothing. Garbage that I like. Mm. I do like his idiot garbage. I like the Bad Boys movies. I like the part in Pearl Harbor when Ben Affleck gets on the train in America and gets off the train in England. I like that part. I like Armageddon when they have to go put the giant penis bomb in the thing to make it explode. I like... Excuse me. T. I like his brand of know-nothing, America, F yeah, militarism... boobs, introducing the lady in Transformers 3.
Butt first.
I know everything about him is wrong. I know everything that I'm seeing is not right.
To me...
I understand that he's...
He is everything wrong with the world today.
I understand.
And he's also, like, I think the worst nightmare of what the French New Wave started.
Can I say this? And I'm going to keep going on.
Go on.
Those are all of his... obsessions, whether he means it or not, if he's just a huckster or not, is we don't know yet. But I think that his obsession with all of these terrible things, and all of those terrible things are wrapped up in an obsession with being number one and having all the money and having all the power. And
I feel date raped by his movies.
I appreciate those obsessions, and I want to see a director... give me his obsessions. And so, yeah, he might be a bad example of what the French New Wave started, but he's still an example of what the French New Wave started. And if auteurism is the legacy, then that's what he is. And you don't have to like it. And it can be garbage auteurism, but that's what it is. And I'm viscerally pleased by his films, especially the Transformers movies, because of the fact that they are big robots and they are fighting. And that there are a million spinning gears and rotating parts and things that are all visually confusing to you on screen. This is the least visually confusing of his films.
And yet...
but it is still visually confusing. And I'm excited by that. Ugh. I'm excited by the awful, like Manola and James were saying on the way out of the screening the other day, the stand brackage.
The stand brackage of it all. Yeah, but I mean...
I like it.
There's
and
nothing...
I don't like it ironically. You can know something is garbage and still take pleasure in it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you're liking things ironically or keeping your distance. I was thinking the other day... that, like, if any of my friends said, hey, I haven't seen this movie, would you go see it again? I would probably go with them.
Ugh.
Like, I had that good a time.
I had
a good time while the building was falling over and Chicago was being killed.
I was miserable for all most of that screening. And granted, it didn't help that they showed it in that terrible Expand 3D with
right.
the heavy red glasses,
yeah,
which is my
that.
Least
I
favorite
hate
thing.
I hate Expand.
Yeah. I like Real D and I like Disney Digital, but the Expand is the pits.
Those glasses are awful.
Yeah, but even without that, I still would have been miserable because his movies just are an assault. It's like, it's this combination of like horrible sort of music video, TV commercial, gleaming surfaces and like curvy muscle cars and curvy women and sort of like awful frat boy penis measuring contest kind of mentality.
Right.
Combined with this sort of visual and oral A-U-R-A-L chaos going on. I find his movies just misery-inducing, and they give me headaches, and I can't stand him. I want him to go away, because no other director makes movies that I find
I
as viscerally awful.
I would watch a Transformers movie every summer. If he could crank them out that
then
best.
You're part of the problem.
I don't think I am.
You are part of the problem.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I don't feel like I have to reject that kind of cinema to be, you know, taken seriously for what I
look,
feel about stuff.
Look, I have plenty of crap that I love in all
fine.
Aspects of
then
things.
Like it. Let me like this crap.
Ugh, but this crap is just It's
why is this crap more insidious than other crap?
Insidious was the word I was about to use. It is insidious because it's so successful.
Right.
I know, that which is ridiculous. People want to go see it, so who am I to say that they can't go see it? But, you know, I mean, like, why is Steven Spielberg putting his imprimatur on this junk, garbage, awful, stepping on my face movies? Why is he doing it? Why,
Money.
And why isn't he, like...
So much money.
Why isn't he showing Michael Bay how to be Michael Bay and still, like, I don't know, tell a story?
Oh, you think Michael Bay can be told?
If
you think someone can tell Michael Bay something?
I think Steven Spielberg could.
No. Steven Spielberg...
Then why is he there?
Why is who there?
Why is Spielberg there and putting his name on this shit?
Because this he stuff. Likes... Maybe Sorry. He likes the garbage that... Maybe he likes the garbage that Michael Bay makes. Mm. Maybe you don't know Steven Spielberg the way you thought you did.
I guess maybe not.
Maybe he's not your Amistad bro every day after all. You ever think about that? Huh?
Look, I have Spielberg beef too, but I just, you know, I don't know. I hate these movies with a white hot passion.
I like them because they are written by robots. They are performed by robots.
Because I would love to see, a fun movie about giant robots wailing the tar out of each other and destroying major cities. I would love that, but not these.
Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla.
Exactly.
For example.
Or with whatever the one with Jet Jaguar in it, you know. But like...
That's Godzilla versus Megalon.
Or it? Space Monster? They all have about 8 titles, so who knows. Anyway, but yeah, so I just... Basically, it boils down to this. If you are like Dave White and you like watching the oeuvre of Michael Bay, you will enjoy continuing to watch it in Transformers Dark of the Moon.
If, like me,
you wish that Michael Bay were cut up into several pieces, all of which were sent to different islands so that he couldn't reconnect and become Mecha Michael Bay, do not go within 10 feet of this movie because you'll want to shoot yourself, which I certainly did while watching Transformers Dark of the Moon.
I will give you this. I don't like... how relentless the constant running theme pretty much through every movie that isn't Bad Boys is war is great. like he seems to really believe that. Like it's not just he's obsessed with the ideas of war or the machinery of war making or just the excitement of watching it.
Right.
I think he really thinks war is really awesome. Like, I think I think that might be something that he's super into. Like thinks that there should just always be wars.
Yeah, well, going on. Him and the Republican Party.
I will give you that. That is something that might be a fact. About
I mean, I will admit there were a few things about this movie I enjoyed. I did enjoy the building falling over, even though it was like everything else a bit much after a while. I did enjoy the actors in this movie who shouldn't have been in this movie, like Frances McDormand.
Yeah, but that's what you and all the other film critics say. Oh, well, I enjoyed Frances McDormand.
She was funny.
She was funny.
You know, look.
But that's your fallback. That's your, like, well, I didn't hate all of it. I enjoyed Frances McDormand.
Look, if I didn't enjoy Frances McDormand, I would say I didn't enjoy Frances McDormand either. But I did enjoy her. We were talking yesterday about how it was kind of funny, the idea that she had to spend half the movie, like, talking to a tennis ball and pretending that it was Optimus Prime. And then we were saying that when she had to do scenes
to Josh Duhamel.
Josh Duhamel. I was like, can I get the tennis ball back?
Pretend he's a tennis ball.
That tennis ball is giving me more.
Am I talking to Josh Duhamel or to the tennis ball? Right,
or is he a tennis
Which
ball?
Which one is...
I can't tell.
Who is this in front of me right now?
You know, I did like Alan Tudyk as the goofy Dutch guy. He's funny.
I know how you are.
Oh, don't even.
That's the thing the other day. You were on What the Flick, and Ben was literally oohing and aahing and goo-gooing about the goo-goo.
Goo-goo and Bothra, yeah.
We'll get to her in a second. But like, the look on his face was
Ben likes the ladies, and he will say so in reviews.
He looked right, looked right in the camera and was like, she's the most beautiful woman. like basically shilling for a date. Like, I liked that a lot. I liked that he did that. I'd never do stuff like that.
Yeah, Ben will share.
I like that he did that. That was funny. All right, so we should talk about Larry Crown.
Let's talk about Larry Crown.
Since we're on the subject
of Gugu Mbothera.
Gugu
Mbothera? That's how Christie said it.
Mbothera. I just like that her name is Gugu.
Yes.
G-U-G-U.
She is Lady Gugu.
Do we know it's Gugu?
It is Gugu.
Are we sure it's not like Juju or something? Like, where is she from that's her name?
Africa.
What
country? I don't know specifically.
I'm going to find out.
All right, fine.
I got the IMDb open.
I generally trust Christy's pronunciations because they have to. She has to say this stuff on the television, so she usually finds out how to say, like Jom Kalei Sarah, whatever that guy's name was, who did.
Yeah, you know where she's from?
Where?
England.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Where are her parents from?
Her parents are South African.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm from Atlanta. There aren't a lot of Alonzos there necessarily.
Her full name is Guguletu.
Guguletu?
Guguletu.
Spell that.
Guguletu.
Hmm. So yes.
She's British.
She is. Anyway, so she's in Larry Crown.
Which makes sense because they all do perfect English accents. Of course. Ewan McGregor.
Oh, God. You mean American accents.
Did I say?
You said English accents.
Oh, whatever. What's his face? Sam Worthington, who's Australian.
Australian, yeah.
That guy can't.
No. Yeah.
There's never any doubt that he's from Australia.
Although Ewan McGregor is getting better.
In Beginners, he was great.
In Beginners, he was good. And in I Love You, Philip Morris.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, so you're right.
He's getting better at the whole Yank thing.
Right.
So Larry Crown, yes. Tom Hanks, Julia Roberts, Gugu Mbatha-Raw.
Yeah.
Wilmer Valderrama. You know, here's the thing.
We have now discussed this. This is now, this thing I'm about to say has now been discussed briefly on this podcast, and then Christy brought it up again on What the Flick. So now it's becoming a thing that has to be talked about that you are
Twitter friends with Nia Vardalos.
Yeah.
Now, okay, but here's
meant to be name droppy. This is in the interest of film full disclosure.
Yes. But what I was going to say though was that months ago Nia sent me a message on Twitter and said, "Look, this is not a movie that critics are necessarily going to like. I won't be mad if you don't like it." So I had permission from her to not like this movie if I didn't like this movie.
Before we talk about, do we already talk about how she yelled at us? Were you there?
What? Who?
Nia Vardalos.
When did she yell at us?
Not at us personally.
What are you talking about?
Were you with me at the screening of I Hate Valentine's Day?
I was not.
Okay, this is really great. We didn't talk about this on the podcast yet?
No.
Okay.
You never even told me this story.
Before we even talk about Larry Crown, I have to talk about this really funny experience that happened. They were not showing I Hate Valentine's Day, this movie that Nia Vardalos
wrote and directed.
Right? A couple years ago.
And starred in.
They weren't showing it to the press for some reason that I could remember, or at least not to critics.
Uh-huh.
And then they showed it to us at the Greek Film Festival.
Huh.
They made us go to the Egyptian and go through all the red carpet stuff and everything.
Oh, I know you love that.
Which I can't stand doing. We saw it at the Greek Film Festival.
And I'm sure...
And they put all the...
Nia Vardalos is the biggest star on Earth at the Greek Film Festival, right?
Oh, yeah. And...
Where's your phone?
It's over there. I'm not picking it up.
Well, you can't seem to turn it off.
It'll stop.
Okay,
it's going to stop in a second. See, there, it's done.
Okay, go on.
They put all the critics together in one
little pen
in the audience. Like, we all had, like, two or three rows just to sit in off to the side. And she got up before the movie started, and she's like, "Where are the critics?" And I can't remember the exact quote, but she really, like... Let the critics have it. This is before the movie starts.
So you're really going in with
It was it was so great. She goes, "You better not write terrible things about this movie." And I can't remember if she said, "I'm coming after you" or something, if you do. But it was really great because I have never been, before or since,
assaulted.
Pre-scolded before a movie. And by the filmmaker. Like,
wow.
You better behave. Like, it was really like someone saying, like, "You better behave or I'm going to spank you." And I had such a wonderful experience to be to be yelled at before. I mean, there were other people sitting, other critics that were sitting with, near me who were like, well,
how
like,
dare like, she?
Who does she think she is? And I was thinking, well, she's Nia Fardell.
She doesn't exactly have the most critic review driven career. I mean,
I was like, first of all, I think she is really funny. And I think she has
she's
this
super charming effortless, on screen.
Effortless kind of charm that even if you don't think she's funny, she kind of wins you over anyway, I feel.
Dave and I had to endure this not funny movie that she didn't write or direct but starred in called My Life in Ruins.
Poopy cacas. Duty cacas.
And she sort of like fireman's carries the whole movie. Because, I mean, it's all basically sort of a weak tea retread of If It's Tuesday, This Must Be Belgium. But she
might need to explain what that is.
Which is a 60s comedy about a package tour.
That even I haven't seen. But you bring it up quite a bit because I think you watched it a lot when you were a child.
No, I didn't see it until television. I was an adult. It's one of those titles you know. Anyway, and we'll be talking about it for Monte Carlo too later in the show. But it's about this sort of, you know, wackiness of this group of Americans hustling through Europe on this, you know, ratty ass package tour. So My Life in Ruins, basically she's a Greek tour guide dealing with, you know, a falling down bus and these oddball tourists
And a man named Poopy Cacas.
and
another man named Duty Cacas.
If you ever want to make Dave White laugh, just say Poopy Cacas and he will laugh.
It is
every
the only
time.
Funny thing in the whole movie. And when they said it for the first time, I sat in the press screening and I just went, bah! Like, I'm alone in thinking this is funny because, again, I'm sitting with all these film critics.
I was with you at that.
Well, then it was you and me laughing.
Yeah, we were in.
There was no one else in that screening room who thought Poopy Cacas was
nearly as hilarious as we did.
The funniest thing they'd heard all week.
But anyway, so the movie's not good at all, but Nia Vardalos,
she's great.
Super charming and funny, right. And she kind of makes you believe that you're seeing a better movie than you're actually seeing.
I just loved, getting back to I Hate Valentine's Day.
Oh, yes.
I just loved her giant balls to, like, get a group of film critics in a room and be like, I hate all of you.
Now watch my movie. Yeah.
Watch this movie and you better like it. I just thought that was great. So
Larry Crown, she co-wrote with Tom Hanks, who also directed and stars. And, I mean, it's the kind of, like, whatever bad thing you want to say about it is true. I mean, it's hokey and it's contrived and it's sitcom-y and whatever. But I don't know. I found it charming. And I think it is one of the most sort of perfectly timed movies. I think it's a message that's going to reverberate with a lot of people right now. The idea that no matter how old you are and how useless, you know, or outdated your profession makes you feel, you know, if you've been sort of tossed aside for, you know, for younger people or because of downsizing or whatever, you know, that it's never too late to redefine yourself and kind of, you know, remake your life. And I really enjoyed it. I didn't know that I was gonna. I mean, like I said, I was pre-warned by Nia Vardalos that this was not a critics movie and that, you know, she would totally understand if we didn't like it. But I liked it. And, you know, I can't defend it. I don't think it's a great movie, but, you know, it's a charming diversion.
I thought, as I watched it, that it was kind of like, it's the movie that, if anyone had gone to see Wendy and Lucy, if Wendy and Lucy had been a movie for a huge audience.
Right, if Wendy and Lucy had gotten studio notes.
Yeah. Then that would be the kind of movie that this is.
Right.
Wendy and Lucy is a film by Kelly Reichardt.
Who did Meek's Cut Off?
Yeah, Meek's Cut Off and Old Joy. Absolutely nothing like Larry Crown, but no. Thematically.
But it's about someone sort of at the end of their tether trying to find a new
job. She's past the end of her tether. Yeah. She's desperate. She's desperate. She's desperately poor. She's going to take to riding the rails, basically.
Yeah, she's like living out of her falling apart car.
And she loses her dog.
Yeah.
And the whole movie is like, she can't go forward until she finds the dog. And it's painful to watch. It's heartbreaking. And
Michelle Williams gives
terrifying
the most intense performance. Yeah. Like, I think she's so great in that.
There is none of that terror in Larry Crown.
No.
There's none of that, I'm so poor, I'm so broken down now that anything horrible could happen to me.
Yeah.
You never get that sense of that in Larry Crown.
But again, that's not the story this movie's telling.
I understand that. I would have liked if there had been a little more peril, you know, a little more threat to his well-being than there was. I know that part of the point of the movie is that you'll never, you know, sink down to the bottom if you have all of these people around who love you
right.
and who want to help take care of you and who will root for you and help pull you back up again.
Right, and
which is, again, different from Wendy and Lucy. Yeah. It's an apple and an orange.
And also that he's taking, you know, part of what his reinvention is, he's taking these college courses, and if you've seen the trailer, you know, he's taking this public speaking class from Julia Roberts, and, you know, they fall in love, whatever. But also,
she's a terrible professor, by the way.
She
doesn't do a dang thing.
She drinks. But he's also taking this econ class from George Takei, who is hilarious. Mm-hmm. And in so doing, comes to realize that his mortgage is a money loser, and he basically, there's a scene that's clearly designed to make people stand up and cheer, because for a lot of people this is their position, where he basically goes to the bank and says, yeah, it's yours now, I'm walking away, and like hands all the papers over to Rita Wilson actually.
Right.
So it was just, I don't know, there, it just, I liked how the dominoes fell into place, and it's kind of like Gilmore Girls, that idea that there's this town of lovable eccentrics who take care of each other. Like, you know, between he's got the goofy next door neighbors who are always having garage sales, you know, and he's got the scooter gang from the college that he falls in with.
Adopted by a scooter gang of young, good looking community college students and their sort of ruffian friends who should be on motorcycles in reality.
Led by Wilder Rama and Gugu Mbatha-Raw.
But he's adopted by a scooter gang who also happen to be sort of a team of organizational experts.
And stylists.
They go into his home. They feng shui his home up. They make him dress like Chris Angel. They put him in shiny
and ascots. Shirts
like this. Like, frilly man scarves. It's weird, but the minute the scooter gang showed up, I thought, okay, well, this is now going to be, this isn't going to be anything about a man who might be near the end of his tether. This is going to be a nonstop dork parade,
It's a Tom Hanks super, joint, you know?
super dorky movie about people who love each other and who are friends, and they're all in it together, and they're all gonna
they all go to the
diner together.
Yeah, you know? And he winds up becoming a short order
he's
cook.
He's the cook at the diner, and they all show up. They're like, "Hey, Larry Crown," like they call him Lance Corona.
take your parents to see Larry Crown.
Yeah, my mom is gonna really love this movie.
In fact,
my mom was very excited by the trailer for this movie. I don't hate this. I gave it a good review over on movies.com. Because there's nothing, it's unhateable.
Yeah.
Unless you want reality, if you want Wendy and Lucy.
Yeah, this ain't
if
it.
If you want a real examination of how desperate people can be in the way the American economy is right now, then watch Wendy and Lucy. Because it's a fantastic movie. It'll rip you in half.
Is that your DVD pick this week?
Why not?
Okay.
Sure, it's also my DVD pick of the week. I just decided that's what that was.
My DVD pick, going back to Nia Vardalos for a moment, is Connie and Carla, which is as different from Wendy and Lucy as you can get, even more than Larry Crown is. And here's the thing. Connie and Carla on the big screen was kind of like, But there's something about watching it on television that makes it way better. I don't know what it is.
I haven't seen it on TV.
I watched it on TBS one day when I was like just lying on the couch. I was like, this is a lot more charming on television for some reason. So, you know, it's a very silly movie, and it's basically like the chick version of Some Like It Hot. But but you know, she's fun, and Toni Collette is a riot, and
I like the parts where they sing.
Yeah, there's a lot of silly fun musical numbers and a great cameo appearance by Debbie Reynolds, which prompts one of the drag queens to say, "I loved you, and what's the matter with Helen?"
So, yeah, Larry Crown, if it's cinema you're looking for.
Yeah.
Not
so much.
This is not the movie.
But if it's a movie you're looking for.
If it's a charming movie, I will say this also. Tom Hanks and Julia Roberts, they could not have less sexual chemistry desire going on if they tried.
They're like two chaperones at the high school dance.
When they kiss, you either want to look away or just study it, because it is the tight lippedest kiss that I have ever seen. It's like they are like rubbing mouths together.
There are certain big stars that I don't know why they get paired, apart from on paper it seems like you know, Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie in The Tourist. Like, I'm sure on paper that seemed like, oh, they're so huge and da-da-da. Yeah. But then together they have no thing. And you know, I didn't. Well, I'm not going to get into the whole Charlie Wilson.
They seem to like each other. They seem, like I said, they seem to like each other as movie star buddies.
Yeah, I mean, they're the perfect. They should totally be on Oprah together.
Right.
It's just being in a movie together. It's, you know.
Yeah. Being in a movie together would be fine. It's just I don't believe them as a couple. On any level.
Which they were in Charlie Wilson's War. They're not, right.
I don't remember.
Pals or something.
I don't remember. There's no real courtship that goes on. There's just sort of like an impromptu kiss.
Right.
Where they're supposed to be revelatory, I guess.
Oh, I do want to point out that Julia Roberts' no good husband in this, played by Bryan Cranston, is supposedly addicted to internet porn. And when we see the screen, it is the tamest internet porn you've ever seen. It's chicks in bikinis.
Yeah.
It's like,
she's all mad about
it's
that.
It's like pinup girl porn. It's like, you know, again, I guess keeping the movie mom friendly.
Here's a question I have about that specific thing.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, because you know, the women I know are all sort of, you know, cool. Do women get upset about guys looking at porn? Do women understand that for guys, porn is just sort of like eating chips? I mean, it's not like...
they're not cheating.
It's not a thing where they...
That's not his sole.
Women look at porn. I wonder if
that's not his sole crime in the movie.
I understand that, but talking about the very the specific larger thing issue. Of in the media, I see this all the time, and I remember going back to Oprah, seeing several episodes over the years of Oprah where people would talk about my husband's addicted to porn, and I'd be like, "Well, define addicted to porn," and she'd be like, "Well, he looks at it every day," and I'm like, "Okay. Now what? Like, what else? What else do you
got? How for how long every day?
What else you got? I mean, like, is this like something that happens once a day for 15 minutes or all day? Like,
ladies, write into the show and let us know.
I don't understand. I mean, because
linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
I think it needs to be said that porn is just sort of a neutral thing for guys, no matter what they are.
I think there are people who get addicted to porn.
Well, and
you know, but I don't trust Oprah to make the distinction between the casual user and
I just wonder what the addict. It makes me wonder, like, is any like, and this really only applies to straight guys. But do straight women, do they have a problem with their male partners looking at porn in general?
I hope our listeners will.
Is that a thing? Like, because I don't get it.
I have no idea
if that's a. Yeah, I don't understand. I don't see the problem. Really, it's like it's seriously like having a bag of Lay's potato chips. I mean, that's what porn is.
No, I think it's the kind of thing that men can overdo. But like I said, I don't. Given Oprah's weird hang-ups about sexuality in general, I don't trust her to be the arbiter.
Yeah, in the movie,
how much is too much?
One of Bryan Cranston's big problems is that he looks at He looks at ladies in bikinis. Which doesn't make any sense.
He looks at scantily clad, but nonetheless clad ladies.
Right, on yeah. I don't quite understand that bit. But anyway, yeah, so sure. You know, here's the other thing I like. One final thing I want to say about Larry Crown. Okay. The closing credits are really hilarious.
Oh, my God.
Because them...
It's
on scooter.
It's Tom and Julia on a scooter in front of a green screen.
Crazy green screen, like backgrounds of like cities around the world, was it? Or
just, something
was
like that.
It was like these fake touristy backdrops. Of, yeah. And it's like them kind of going, like waving at the camera, like, hey, everybody, we're off on a scooter ride.
You know, it's like some sort of music video almost. You know?
That was my favorite. That's my favorite thing in the movie. That, looking at that. And thinking to myself, why is that happening?
Who thought this was a good idea?
Yeah. It was kind of like that last scene in Amelie where they're on the scooter and they're like, zip, 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 doop, doop, like through the streets of Paris.
It reminds,
and she's like waving and they're like all happy. And,
it reminds me of the, have you ever seen the Jimmy Somerville video for the cover?
I've never seen a Jimmy Somerville video.
You are lying.
No, I'm not making that up.
Really?
I've seen the video for Small Town Boy. Does that count?
Well, okay, maybe.
That is anyway. The one. Oh, wait, no. I also saw the video for the other Bronski Beat song,
Why?
Okay. Where they're like flying through the air.
The angels.
Pulleys
yeah.
and stuff.
Yeah.
I saw that one too.
All right. Well, anyway, later on he did a cover of this 60s French hit called Comment te dire adieu. And he did this video of it.
You're losing the audience.
Anyway, he does a video of it where it's like, it's literally him and the woman who's singing the song with him in this like convertible with all this sort of nutty green screen stuff behind them. And there's one part where they both sort of like jump up in their seats and go back down as though they had just driven over a bump. I mean, it's just the dopiest thing in the world. And that's what the closing credits of Larry Crown reminded me of.
I have no idea what you're talking about anymore.
You do this all the time. you decide to be thick just because you don't want to think about something.
Let's talk about other stuff now.
All right. Let's Monte Carlo.
Oh, that's right. That was the other movie that came out this
year. Yes.
You know, whatever.
You know,
does anyone care? I mean, would anyone actually care if we didn't talk about this movie?
I think that people want to
know. All right.
This is what we do. We talk about movies.
I can't think of anything interesting to say because
it's just sort of
a dumb kid movie.
Well, but talk about the thing you read on New York Magazine.
What?
How this was originally a...
Oh, it was meant to be an adult.
Yeah, it was going to be like Nicole Kidman and like two other
like
women
Sandra
being...
Bullock-y.
Yeah, like it was supposed to be like sort of How to Marry a Millionaire.
It's based on a... Apparently it's based on a book.
Yeah, called Headhunters.
About adult women who go off to Europe in search of rich husbands. Or
yeah, who
like
sort
that.
Of pretend to be heiresses.
They pretend to be heiresses.
To snag rich husbands.
And instead now it's a Selena Gomez movie where she exchanges personalities.
No.
Exchanges identities.
She is mistaken for.
She's mistaken for an heiress, and she kind of plays along.
Right.
She and her friends from Gossip Girl.
Right.
Leighton Meester and
Katie Cassidy.
And it's
directed by Thomas Bazooka, who did Big Eden, which
Bazooka!
I love. Bazooka! Bezucha. He did Big Eden, which is a movie I love, and it's in my book, 101 Messy Movies for Gay Men. And
Big Eden is very sweet.
And he did The Family Stone, which is not in my Christmas movie book because it's not very good. and he co-wrote it with Maria Magenti, who did The Incredibly True Adventures of Two Girls in Love. So uh-huh. I love how this is still a thing where, like, when you want to make a teen girl movie, you go to the homos.
I guess.
Yeah, but there's a proud history of this. You've got Jim Fall did the Lizzie McGuire.
A proud history. A proud history.
Jim Fall did the Lizzie McGuire movie. Tommy O'Haver did Get Over It and Ella Enchanted. And the guy that did Kissing Jessica Stein did Legally Blonde 2.
I mean, helicopter. Like,
it was a whole thing. Going
helicopter.
On there.
This is Los Angeles.
Yes.
Helicopter.
But anyway, yeah, it's my beef with Monte
Carlo.
They
go to Paris and you think it's going to be a story about, you know, young girls who find out about themselves and how much they love life in Paris and their lives. And, you know, they might have some romance, but it's mostly going to be about their self-discovery. And that's not what it is at all.
Yeah,
it turns into a mistaken identity comedy and a wacky missing necklace comedy and a we got to get boyfriends comedy and.
Yeah, it's
it kind of lost it, me. It's not the worst thing in the world, but it's a movie for 9-year-old things. Girls, basically.
Yeah, I like if it had been wacky mistaken identity farce and Who's Got the Necklace, great. If it had been, you know, girls discover themselves and learn to bond and blah blah blah, great. But it doesn't do both well.
Right.
But I did enjoy. I did enjoy.
I'm yawning just talking
about it. I did actually. I think I enjoyed Selena Gomez more as the awful heiress than I did as the.
Oh, yeah.
The sweet small town Texas waitress. Well,
she's very appealing.
Yeah.
That Selena Gomez. She's adorable.
If you didn't see Ramona and Beezus,
it's then you're part of a very large group of people.
Yes, but you know, like if you have like a 5-year-old niece you have to entertain one day, that would be the movie to pop in.
Yeah, but you know, this is whatever.
Yeah,
it's a perfectly acceptable movie for young girls.
Yes,
you know, it's not good, it's not bad, it's just there. Yeah, I can't really think of anything else to say about Monte Carlo, except that they talk all about going to Paris at the beginning, and they end up in Paris for a day, and then they wind up in Monte Carlo, and they don't really seem to care that they haven't stayed in Paris.
Well, because the choice is to stay in Paris in the horrible hotel with the terrible package tour that runs through everything, to go to like the super swank Monte Carlo hotel in the heiress's room with her million pieces of Louis Vuitton luggage and the Bulgari necklace.
Here is the problem. If this had been a real movie, I'm sorry, I'm still yawning. If this had been a real, you know, anything other than an adaptation of a book.
A loose one, obviously.
Yeah. They would have said, you know what? Screw this package tour. Let's just go explore Paris for a week. We're young and we're adventurous and we're going to explore Paris for a week. And it would have been this entirely different movie.
Right, but I think
I would have probably enjoyed watching it a lot more.
Well, because you like Paris, but you know, you've never been to Monte Carlo. You don't know what they got down there. But the thing is, I think that the problem with those package tours is you can't just run off on your own.
Sure,
like,
you can.
No, you can't. Like, I think, you know,
they did.
Well, yes. They got left by them, actually.
Right. But, well, you just orchestrate your own getting left behind, and then you go run off and enjoy the rest of Paris.
But you know what? That's not the movie they made.
They're not going to arrest you. They're not coming after you.
Okay, fine. But this is the movie they made instead, and so, you know, it's
I wanted something else.
I wish that it had spun its plates better.
Yeah. Yesterday we saw The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art. And this is the most important movie we're going to talk about.
I was going to talk about Terry real quick, but go see it. It's real good. That's all.
When I see Terry, we can talk about Terry.
Okay.
I have to wait. You got to wait till I see Terry. Well, I'm going to see it. I'm going to see it like today or tomorrow.
All right.
We went to the Los Angeles County Museum of Art yesterday. We saw The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, 1958.
Yeah. Their outgoing curator, Ian Burney, basically has put together this two sort of summer festivals. One that's happening at night on actually three, really, because he's weekend nights he's doing sort of these, you know, kind of his favorites and classics. You know, the Tuesday matinee series is continuing with awesome old movies, and then also this Saturday matinee series, which
Tim Burton.
It kind of ties into the Tim Burton exhibition, but not entirely. Tim Burton chose them all?
I thought that Tim Burton chose all these movies. Am I wrong about that?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure.
My understanding is that it's a Tim Burton Presents
I see.
Kind of thing to go along with the exhibit that's happening with him at LACWA. Now, I could be wrong.
Maybe. I don't really know.
But every Saturday afternoon for the rest of the summer, they're doing vintage kitty matinee movies, basically. Now, it's been years since anyone has called these things kitty matinees, but
it used to be a thing.
In the 50s and the 60s and the 70s.
Yeah.
Maybe even
the early 80s.
Possibly even the early 80s, but I experienced it in the 1970s when I was a young, small child.
Mm-hmm.
And you old sort now. Of at the tail end of them doing this.
Right.
Every Saturday and Sunday afternoon, they would have kid movies. Movies for kids.
How early? Like 10 a.m., 1 p.m., what are we, how early?
Basically 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah. They were always pretty much at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
It was at the Civic Theater in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, which is where I was a small child. Or it was over at the Jerry Lewis Twin Cinema on the other side of town.
Right.
And you could go back and forth. And what was great would be if they were each having a kiddie matinee.
You go to one on Saturday
and one on Sunday. Now, I was the only kid in my neighborhood that wanted to do this. The rest of the kids in my neighborhood were content to go play in, like, the dirt, which was fine for them.
Not for the sensibilities of young Dave White.
That's right. I didn't want to be around them. I didn't want to hang out with them much. I didn't want to run around in the dirt every day. We did that after school.
Mm.
You know, I would get home from school. I'd have a bowl of cereal. I would watch Mike Douglas, and then I would go run around in the dirt with the kids. I'd watch the Mike Douglas show, and then I'd go around and roll around in the dirt with the other kids.
Who is your favorite guest co-host of the week?
Mason Reese, because he was a kid. I liked it when Mason Reese was the host because he was a kid. He was a kid superstar.
Yes, he was.
At the time. And I was like, that kid's on the Mike Douglas show. I could do that too.
Did you watch John and Yoko Week?
If I did, I don't remember it.
Hmm.
And if I did see it and I probably just glossed right over it because I wasn't really aware of who John Lennon really was.
Right.
You know, I knew that there was a band called the Beatles, but I don't know that I associated any of them having names.
Gotcha.
You know, like, I don't know that I would have looked at John Lennon and thought, oh, yes, he was in the Beatles.
Right.
You know, it didn't occur to me.
And you weren't a Yoko fan yet.
I was not I was six, seven years
hey,
old.
Hey, I don't know when these things start.
Yeah. So I would just beg my mother. You know, I'd be like, will you drive me to the movies and just drop me off? Now, this is the early 1970s. It was still a thing that you could do. You could drop a second grader off at the movie theater and leave them and let that kid have a good time at the movies. And so I had the best. It was the best part of my childhood, really. Like, being dropped off with enough money for popcorn and orange soda. And left to be hiding in my big dark fort with a movie. I didn't want other kids to go with me either. Like, if other kids were like, I want to go see this movie too, and then like the whole neighborhood would go, we'd all get someone else's mom to drag us all there.
That cheapened it for you?
It totally did, because then the mom would stay and she would watch the movie with us, and then, you know, I had to put up with the other kids and their terrible behavior. You know, because I wanted to go and watch the movie. I wanted to be there. I didn't want to run around, run up and down the aisles and talk and bounce in my seat. I wanted to get my popcorn and I wanted to watch the movie.
Were there trailers?
Oh, yeah. For like Clarence the Cross-Eyed Lion and stuff. Yeah.
Was there like a cartoon too?
And Destroy All Monsters. That was the best trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember there ever being cartoons before the movie. It was always just the movie.
Okay.
And there'd be an intermission in the middle of the movie. They'd just stop the movie.
Really?
Intermission. Oh, yeah, yeah, because they wanted the kids to come get some
more
candy.
Snacks, yeah. And not pee in their seats.
Yeah. So I would take the intermission. I would have already purchased my soda and my popcorn.
Yes, of course.
And I would take the intermission to go to the bathroom, maybe.
Uh-huh.
But then I would go back to my seat. I didn't. The riffraff got their popcorn and soda in the middle of the movie.
You planned ahead.
I planned
ahead. You got there early?
I got there early so that I could see.
Look at the posters.
Look at the posters in the lobby.
You were always like this.
And so I could get my snacks and sit. And I had an agenda. I also had a little notebook.
This little insight into you is really explaining a lot about you now.
I had a little notebook at home. I would write down the names of everything I went to see.
Really?
Yes.
Where's that notebook now?
I burned somewhere. I don't know.
Pity.
You know, when you're part of my family and you're
that's right, yes, your entire past is
you're leaving houses in the night to avoid creditors, you know, and your parents are like, pack a bag, you know, like that's
The notebook does not.
That's how we moved when I was a kid.
Okay,
we're leaving. it was never something that we saw coming as children. Like our parents would know that this was coming, but it was always news to me.
They
and my
wouldn't
brothers.
Bother to warn you.
Yeah. Okay. By the way, you're moving across country today. All right. Yeah. So I would go. I would get my mom to take me, and the best experience of my entire childhood was sitting in the dark alone with no one bothering me watching a movie. And so here's what's so great. This summer at LACMA, they showed The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad yesterday. Right. Next week, Fantastic Voyage, The Thing, Journey to the Center of the Earth, The Incredible Shrinking Man, Jason and the Argonauts, Mothra, This Island Earth, and The Horror of Dracula.
Nice.
I am going every Saturday. You can come if you want to. I know yesterday there were four of us.
When we went yesterday, I said, should we sit somewhere else? Do you need to be alone?
I was
all
right with you guys coming with me yesterday, okay. I guess. I might shine you all on a couple Saturdays during this situation and make sure that I'm alone by myself.
You can't have popcorn and soda at the LACMA, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah, I can. You know why? Because I have an adult messenger bag now. And if they don't catch me...
All right.
Because you know what I saw? You know, as we left the theater yesterday, you know what I saw?
What?
Somebody brought in their little bottle of Perrier.
Ew.
Yeah. So, and ew. They left it on the floor. Not only did they bring in their food, they littered. Now, I would never do that.
No. That's...
I might bring some of my snacks into LACMA.
But you're not going to litter.
I'm not going to litter.
No.
I like LACMA too much.
Yes.
Here's what else yesterday was different about the experience. Movie nerds who showed up, the Harryhausen nerds and the Cinemaniacs who are, you don't want to be near these people. You don't want to be near the people who go see five movies a day.
Like,
every day of their lives.
You know, you would think, okay, what place?
They seem unbathed.
What place do we have making fun of, like, movie nerds? But no, these people are.
No. This is not the same thing as being a movie
nerd. This is a whole other degree.
We may be new movie nerds, but these are movie obsessives. These are the people
These are people with movie Asperger's.
These are the hoarders of movie going.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually just sort of unpleasant.
There's a documentary called Cinemaniacs, and it's like these people who just like they focus on ones in New York.
Well, they're
right?
Obsessive. They're obsessive.
That are obsessed that they have to go see every single movie in commercial release and, you know, at museums
in repertory.
I mean, Dave's been pointing them out to me of late. Like, I remember a couple of years ago when we went to see The Leopard at UCLA. Like they got
and
into
we
this,
saw a person. I'm not going to say name, gender, anything.
We got it. Someone,
a person that I see at screenings a lot.
Who got
at
into
press,
a, who
press
got,
screenings?
Yeah, yeah,
so this
yeah.
is a person who writes.
What is that?
Sometimes too.
Is that your phone?
It's a noise.
But
there's a weird noise.
Remember who got into a loud argument about how there was something else showing that night?
Yeah.
And they had to pick one.
They had to pick one.
It was very.
It was weird.
Creepy.
Anyway, so those people were there.
Yeah,
because it's, you know, this classic Ray Harryhausen.
Yeah, who just turned 91. He's still alive.
You know, stop motion animation kind of stuff.
The
other thing, and here's the thing, I really don't like about going to the movies in Los Angeles. It is the one thing I do not like about going to the movies in Los Angeles. People applauding their favorite credit. So when Harryhausen's name comes up on the screen. And then you led the charge with the
Bernard Herrmann. Well, you know.
Like, the Bernard Herrmann's name comes up on screen, and you're like, oh.
Well, you know, look, he came up right after Harryhausen.
Applause.
And I'm like, if Harryhausen's going to get applause, then
I understand it
so
if the director
is
there, and there's going to be a Q&A, and it's at the Cinematheque or whatever.
Right.
You applaud that director. You
know, applauding people who aren't in the theater or are dead.
It doesn't make any sense to me. It's not something I've ever understood. It's very specific, it seems, to Los Angeles.
I bet they do it in New York.
They might do it in New York, but they really do it here. Drives me crazy. Yeah. Otherwise, I had a blast.
It was fun.
The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad. That movie is hilarious. The dialogue is so funny because they're all just like, I shall go to the island of the Colossus, and I shall return with the eggshell to make the potion to de-shrink the princess.
It's like True Grit, in that no one ever uses a contraction.
Yeah. They sort of just announce the lines of dialogue over each other.
What bugged me was that, so when the sorcerer guy who keeps trying to get him to go back to the island, like, does his prophecy and talks about how things are going to be terrible. They know that he's lying, and they know that he's a flimflam artist.
And they keep doing it anyway.
But then the princess gets shrunk down to, like, you know, French fry size, and they never go, oh, I guess the sorcerer did it. No, they go run to him, oh, sorcerer, help us. How do we undo this? Right. It's like, duh.
They start blaming each other.
Yeah, who do you think shrunk her down to a French fry? I'm going to go with the sorcerer, probably. That was a little annoying. But no, I had a good time. It was a lot of fun. And I'm going to try and go to some of those. We're going to miss some of them because we're, you know.
Well, when we're in Maine, we're going to miss we're gonna miss Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Oh, okay.
When Maine.
And then I've got Outfest stuff coming up, so I'll be. Oh, Outfest, by the way, if you are in Los Angeles, is July 7th to the 17th, and there's a lot of amazing stuff. So go to outfest.org and get the whole schedule and get your tickets and go. It's gonna be great.
We're done.
Are we?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen. We thank you all for listening. We would love to have more listeners. So, your homework assignment.
Yeah, I was fixing to go throw away this wet tea bag here, but
your homework assignment this week is
tell
to
your friends
tell
and
your
make
friends
them
about
listen
this show
to it and spread, make us spread make the us word. Super popular.
Or just more popular than we are now.
Oh, super popular.
Okay, fine. Super popular. But yeah, spread the word and leave us a good review on our iTunes page. Like us at Facebook, the Linoleum Knife podcast page. Drop us an email at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter at linoleumcast. I want to thank our...
Keep talking.
Okay. Want to thank our fellow podcast pals, Popcorn Mafia, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Blowhard, The Podcast, The Criterion Cast, Fat Guys of the Movies, Secretly Timid, and join us next time.
Super popular.
Have a good week. Bye.